Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay, bisexual, or a trans man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Before I introduce my special guest for tonight, I just want to mention that not even 2 months away, we're going to be together in a wonderful healing weekend in Irvine, California. I am so psyched up. I am so excited because we have not only some wonderful speakers, but the women who are coming are phenomenal. Many of these women I've had the opportunity to meet in the past, many of them who are through their healing process, but they want to share with others or help others get through it. And this will be my last healing weekend. So if you're interested in joining us, we still have 4 seats left. That's it. Because I have to really halt the number, otherwise it just gets too out of hand. So 4 more people can come to the weekend. Please write to me at bonkay@aol.com if you are interested. And I promise you it will be a life-changing experience on your road to recovery. Without much further ado, I'd like to introduce my wonderful guest, Dr. Maggie Bonet. Maggie, welcome back to the show.
Bonnie, thank you. My pleasure.
And I'm so happy that you came back because you're a very popular guest on the show because you're a woman who understands the situation. You're also a therapist, a doctor. You work a lot with people with all kinds of disorders. And you have a therapeutic approach where you do all kinds of wonderful things to help the needs of each client. And, you know, there's a few things I wanted to talk to you about tonight that we really haven't discussed before at length. So I recently did a show with Alexa Servadidio, who's, you know, a guest on my show. She's a therapist in New York. And the topic for the show wasn't so much the gay husbands, but more like toxicity in your life and how to deal with it. And from her perspective, which is very similar to mine, you know, I'm really pretty clear cut. Like, you have to get rid of toxicity in your life, whether it's in your relationship, whether it's in your family. And I know that's hard for people. And I think that a lot of times the women who are a part of our network have come from families where there is a lot of toxicity. So that becomes their norm because that's what they grow up with. But these could be problems with, you know, mental health. It could be with drugs and alcohol. I know that I grew up with a father who was a sociopath. You know, he was really mentally ill. And I think, like, a lot of that behavior influenced a lot of my thinking, because when you're a child growing up, you don't realize what's necessarily right and wrong because you love your parent, and your parent supposedly loves you. And so you look to that parent and try to imitate him or her. And I think that's where a lot of the problems start. But also, I believe it's a lot of role modeling within your own family unit that really has a tremendous effect and choice on the choices that you make in your life in relationships. So do you think you could talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And you know what? I think maybe I may oversimplify it, but I do simplify it. When it comes to toxicity, there is not another option. Now, this is probably not the best example, but I use this frequently. If anybody has ever drank or gotten food poisoning and you get so drunk or the food poisoning is so bad that until you regurgitate it, you will not feel better. And that's because your body is toxic with either alcohol poisoning or some bad food or bacteria. So for me, it's really that simple, that anything in your body that is toxic, whether it be emotionally or physically, no matter how hard you try to withhold it, and again, think about when you have that food poisoning, it's just impossible to feel better until you absolutely regurgitate it and get it out of your system, get rid of it, and leave it there and walk away from it. So it's the same application I feel in life, in situations that we're in, whether it be an unhealthy relationship, it could be intimate, it could be a work relationship, whatever, professional relationship. You must regurgitate it in order to feel better. Does that make sense?
Do you feel? It does. I love the way that you express that also. I would say, like, you have to vomit it out of your system. If
yes,
I had to
absolutely
rephrase that. But do you think a lot of it has to do with the families that we grow up with, that when you grow up in a family where there's toxicity? I just know that as an older adult now, I'm seeing so much more of this, or maybe it's just clearer to me, that we have names for it and titles for it. When I was growing up, we didn't have all these different titles and categories. You know, for instance, even in the gay community, you were straight or you were gay. Now there's like 42 different choices of everything in between. And the same thing, oh, well, you had a mean, a strict mother or a strict father. Now you know words like narcissism, sociopath, antisocial behavior, you know, psychopath. Now you can really, you know, kind of pin it down a little more. But, you know, I didn't know that my father was a sociopath. I just thought he was a non-traditional, happy kind of guy when he did terrible things, though. And so, but that was the environment that I was brought up in, not realizing that these behaviors that he was doing, like burning down buildings, you know, when he didn't want to be there anymore. I mean, he was really bad. And, you know, he had a toxic effect on me. I know that a lot of our women have suffered with different kinds of abuse growing up, but I loved my father. That's the funny thing. Yeah. Like, I didn't think he was abusing me at the time. I thought, well, he's just disappointed in me. You know, of course, the main thing for me was always my weight. And even though my weight has been a chronic problem my whole adult life, when I was younger, I mean, what are we talking? Maybe 10, 15 pounds overweight, you know, throughout my adolescence. But it was always such an issue to him. And, of course, he always said, it's because I love you so much that I don't want you to be heavy, because it will limit your choices and good men that you'll have in the future. But it wasn't just the constant battering. You know, when I was younger, he would always put me on a scale, and if I didn't lose weight, he would hit me, you know, once a week. And,
wow.
You know, so that became very frustrating for me. And, of course, he always said, you know, it's not because I want this for you. It's because I want you to have the best. So in my own mind, a lot of these actions that he was doing, you know, I just thought, well, he really loves me, and he just, this is how he's expressing it. You know, it wasn't until later on that I realized when I myself just felt like such a failure in life from so many of the other messages he was giving me, that I realized that when you love somebody, you don't bring a child up that way to feel insecure or be judged by the way they look. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. I, like you had stated earlier, I really like the way you stated it, and it's totally, the picture you painted summarized it all. Unfortunately, many of the women who are, and I don't want to use the word targeted, but who attract gay men have the tendency to probably be very vulnerable, and you are absolutely correct. Encounter abuse of some sort, as you had in your childhood, later on in life, that's all you've ever known. But for you, that's your norm. And so, absolutely, it's really hard for them to differentiate between the fact that they need to get out of it because it's toxic, or this is just the way of life. Because when you grew up, when you were growing up, undergoing this, but you also continue to feel as if you do love your father, and maybe your father does love you. That's why he has to discipline you, because that's how you're conditioned. So, unfortunately, as adults, we do bring those into our intimate relationships as well.
I think it does, because I know it really screwed up my head as far as how I felt about myself. And I know that he wasn't trying to do that, but that's what the effect was. That when you constantly reinforce week in and week out to a child that you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not thin enough, you know, that I'm embarrassed to be with you, and, you know, hits a child, which, you know, and then he started hitting my brother for a couple of years, telling me it was collective responsibility. And maybe if I wouldn't do it for myself, I would do it for my brother. So, of course, my brother wasn't very happy either with me. But this was a sick mind. And so this is how I grew up. And I think that a lot of these screwed up things I did as young, when I was younger, had a lot to do with feeling that I needed to be loved by somebody for who I was. And, you know, at that point, I did things that were self-destructive as far as being out there, because, you know, I just felt like so worthless. And I don't think that parents always understand how much of an effect children have on them. And I did mention this on Alexa's show also. When I became 40 years old, you know, I still loved my father, even though he had given me a very rough time to go. But I loved him. And I hadn't seen him for a number of years, and he came into town. He never even had met my children. They were like 10 and 12 at the time. And he brought them absolutely nothing, not even a doll or anything. And all he liked to do was sit and hash back the past and, you know, how my mother hurt him. You know, it was always the same story. But, you know, he mentioned something to me that was very hurtful about, you know, how my son was born with a very rare illness. And he said, well, you know, after a conversation a couple times while he was in town, after meeting the children, and he said, well, I can see why he gets sick. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, if you would keep your house better, then he wouldn't be getting sick. And at that point, I was 40 years old, and I'd already, you know, and I said to him, I don't understand what you're talking about. My house is clean, you know, some toys around and stuff. He said, well, it's not clean enough. You know, this is probably why your son is sick, which had nothing to do with, you know, the disease he was born with. And at that point, I said, you know what? This is it. I said, I've been through this now. I was 40 years old. And I wrote him a letter, and I said, this is an official notice to tell you that we are now divorced. You are no longer my father. I am no longer your daughter. I am no longer taking the abuse from you. I'm no longer having to feel bad about myself. You know, I was a struggling single mom at that point, you know, who had accomplished going through college within a short amount of years as a single parent, as a welfare mother. You know, I snuck to school back in those days, so I never have to be in that position again. And, of course, you know, instead of recognizing my accomplishments, he was criticizing my house was not clean enough for him. So that's when I said, you know what, I've listened to this abuse, and as hard as it was, because a parent, you know, women are socialized to love their fathers and their mothers.
Right.
And, you know, I really had always loved my dad in spite of, you know, everything. And I just had to cut him off. And he was shocked. You know, he said, oh, I'm so sorry that I upset you. He said, you know, it won't happen again. I promise. You know, I didn't mean it to be like that. But it was always like that. And I realized at that point, he's not going to change. He'll just continue with his, you know, toxicity towards me. But it was one of the hardest things I ever had to do because I think parents, you know, children love parents. And when your parent doesn't love you back the same way, you're always feeling that you're the one who's at fault, not the parent. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. Even like when you think about children who are whose parents are divorced, for example, you have to convince them that it's not their fault for the divorce. Or there is any other tragedy in the home, half the time children always seem to feel as if they are not, like, something they did to make this happen. But before I proceed, I really just want to acknowledge that what you have gone through, Bonnie, with your father as a child, and it definitely depicts a lot of what continues to happen with women even as they get older. You were able to get yourself power to cut him off, but many people continue with the father or the family member that was manipulative and narcissistic, and also then still have to deal with a husband who is manipulative and narcissistic, and because they don't, it's just a continuous vicious cycle. So I acknowledge what you've gone through and that it was horrible, and I commend you that you were able to find empowerment, to self-empower, to be able to get out of that situation. But as you stated, children do undergo these situations, and it carries them into adulthood.
It really does. I mean, I really say that, you know, children look at their parents, they mimic their parents. And I tell women, when you're in a toxic relationship with a man, not just gay men, but your future choices as well. Maybe they won't be gay, but they'll still be dysfunctional unless you stop the pattern of going on. That children just repeat your footsteps. You know, I call it the monkey see, monkey do, monkey act, just like you syndrome. That whatever your kids see you do, they're going to be repeating it in other ways with other people. But if they see you being knocked down by a guy, I don't mean physically, just emotionally or yelled at, you know, they're going to allow somebody to do it to them because that's what they've been taught is the way to behave.
Right.
And I think that's all part of learned behavior, correct?
Absolutely. It's, you know, again, we do, and I know most parents are aware of that, that they are modeling behaviors for their children, but some parents are not. And I don't want to undermine the fact that people have knowledge and parenting, but even when we are trying to be good parents, and you said that earlier in the show, that frequently some parents aren't even aware, and that is because of their own lack of awareness of themselves, of their characteristics. They don't know that they're narcissistic, and so they don't see the harm that they're to their children. It's not to excuse the behavior, because at some point I'm sure someone must have told you, but you didn't listen. So I still want to bring them to accountability for their behavior and the way they've treated or raised their children. But you are absolutely correct. These children are brought up with parents who have been like that, and they become the same as their parents, even when they see it sometimes. Now, again, I don't want to generalize, because a lot of people see things they do not like in terms of their upbringing, and they make every effort to change it, as you have. So they don't mimic that role in that sense. Like, you're not manipulative, you're not narcissistic, but you are the person who received it. And so for you, when you get it again as a grown-up, it's your norm. But you're not exhibiting those behaviors. But I think in male children, that possibility is there because they have a sense of power over their female partners.
Do you think that people who have these personality disorders are ever aware of them or become aware of them or can change them?
I wonder. You know what? Actually, I have had people who are narcissistic and are aware, and they will say, I know, it's all about me, I get that. However, the acknowledgement is there, and need to change that behavior is not typical for me, at least in terms of the people I've encountered. And they don't find that behavior to be normal. And not that it ever always is, but when a person is so self-centered, they're okay with it, and they see it as a sense of self-empowerment and confidence. And even of who they're touching negatively, they continue with those behaviors because to them they're being their true selves. So
exactly.
I don't know if that answered the question, but I dare say yes, there has been some level of acknowledgement. Can they change or will they change? That is a possibility. It hasn't been my experience.
So I wanted to talk about another topic tonight because a number of the women who are in our group, you know, were posting about this today. I posted something on it because I was just really disgusted. And this made big news this weekend with this man named Chris Burrows, an American television personality. I don't know if you're familiar with the story.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, it was in all the news that he ended up dying, and he died of a drug overdose.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on which story you're reading, but he had a wife and a daughter. And he died from having drugs up his anus. And according to one report, you know, he was with a guy that he got from the app Grindr. Are you familiar
mm-hmm.
with Grindr?
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I
yeah.
am.
So, you know, he met this guy in Grindr. They went to a hotel. And this is what happened. You know, and so there's been, like, a lot of talk about this. And about how heartbreaking it was for his wife and for his daughter. And,
oh, wow.
You know, it's evident, like one of the articles said, excuse me, everybody, I have a really bad virus tonight. That's why I'm like, sounding like this. It's evident that Chris Burrows, a famous face in the media world, some an income earning for his praiseworthy journalism works. Although, you know, they're like praising him in all these articles. Not all share the privilege of carrying the beautiful life journey with what they call a perfect soulmate. However, KTLA reporter Chris Burrows was an exception in such a case. Burrows not only embarked on a blissful married life, but also shared the same profession with his partner in crime. Chris was married to his wife, Mae Du Burrows. The media couple first met while Chris was stationed in Bakersfield, California. Chris Burrows and his wife, there's a picture of them. After getting attracted to one another, the loving couple shared their wedding vows in October 2003, enjoying the love and support for each other. Chris and his wife carried on the beautiful marriage voyage with the love of their beautiful daughter, Isabella. Chris never missed any chance to flaunt the love for his daughter on social media accounts. One such instance was on April 26, 2013, when Chris tweeted a picture of his sweetheart daughter posing on the dress made of his old work shirt. Chris Burrows sweater, you know, they go on and talk about him, you know, this loving, caring, wonderful family man. And yet he was in the hotel having, you know, gay sex with a guy, putting stuff off his backside, which is why, you know, he died. And in fact, the gay media, let me just get this up, because the gay media covered it quite differently. And that's the one that I posted, you know, in our private page. That, let's see where this is. You know, a friend of mine who is a lesbian, you know, she posted on her page. And the account that I posted said, KTLA anchor Chris Burrows dies from an overdose of crystal meth. He died from an overdose. He died from methamphetamine toxicity after being found unresponsive. The death investigation states that Burrows left early from his shift at KTLA news station, claiming he felt sick. States instead of going home, he set up a meeting with a man at a motel in Glendale to have hardcore sex. Burrows repeatedly met the man multiple times in before after meeting on Grindr. When the man arrived, Burrows answered the door fully naked, according to the investigative report. He set up the room with DJ-style lighting, S&M toys, lubrication jelly, and a massage bench. The report states that they were engaged in various different styles of sex, including anal and oral sex. At a certain point of their sexual activities, Burroughs allegedly inserted a rock of crystal meth into his anus and said it was supposed to make him high and loose. Burroughs gave the man a syringe full of GHB and a bottle of Gatorade, and they started having sex again. And during the sexual activity, again, Burroughs put on an S&M mask and entered another rock of crystal meth into his anus, and the man started to fist him. It's reported that Burroughs used an anal nitrate inhaled that produces a euphoric effect called poppers. The man fisted Burroughs while he laid on his face. The man continues to fist him and asked Burroughs if he was okay. Burroughs said he was fine. As the man continues, he heard Burroughs make a grumbling sound and flipped him over to find Burroughs had vomited in his S&M mask. The man called 911 and performed CPR on Burroughs. The emergency responders arrived and took him to an emergency room where he died. It's reported Burroughs did not have a history of drug abuse and only used drugs recreationally. Law enforcement does not suspect the man that encountered Burroughs of foul play, and reportedly he's fully cooperated with the investigators. Burroughs leaves behind a wife and young daughter. So that was the article that I read, you know, from the gay publication.
Yeah.
But in all the other articles in the regular press, like, nobody's mentioning this. They're mentioning what a devoted family man he was and how, you know, in love with his wife he was. Like, if he was so in love with his wife, why was he having gay sex in a hotel?
Right. So obviously, once you asked me, I pulled up the information. And as you are reading this, I am looking for it everywhere. I've Googled, you know, Chris Burroughs, gay sex or gay. Nothing is coming up. Absolutely nothing is coming up. You hear, in fact, one article said that it was an employee of the same company or station he worked for. So, no, they're not reporting it based on the same article that, or according to the article that you are talking about. There's nothing like
right.
that here on the internet. You're absolutely right. Wow. Absolutely.
And, I mean, even here it says on Fox News.
You've got to keep them clean.
Well, Fox News said L.A. anchor died from meth overdose during sexual encounter at hotel, autopsy reports. But, you know, they don't mention anything, what kind of sexual encounter. Let's see, Glendale police were called in days in hotel around 1:15 on December 27th to KTLA news anchor Christopher Burroughs on response to suffering from a medical emergency, quote unquote. Police say a male who'd been with Burroughs at the time placed the call. Burroughs was transported to a hospital. He was pronounced dead. Initial reports suggested he suffered a possible overdose. So once again, you know, they'll talk about an overdose, but they're still saying what a wonderful, happy marriage he had while he's sitting there with a gay man that he met on Grindr.
Yeah.
And why is this so hidden? And once again, you know, it just angers me that people are also feeling so sorry for Chris Burroughs. I mean, and they're saying, oh, it's a shame that his wife and his daughter. But what about the implications for them having to find this out now that he's been seeing a man who had rock meth in his rectum? And they said, reportedly, I'm reading from Fox now, second rock later in the encounter, put the mask on and doubt filters. I mean, how are they supposed to feel with all this news coming out? Nobody's writing about them.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
Wow. And you know what? I don't even have an answer, Bonnie, because as you're speaking, I'm thinking you're finding this out publicly unless there was any kind of inclination prior to this news. To find this out publicly or with the rest of the world must be, oh my gosh, beyond devastating. I'm not even really sure what to say about that and how this woman must feel. And no, they are not covering now. One may say it's probably a little bit too soon, but I dare say they will not cover it. They will not be looking into how she feels. How is the family reacting to this? Did they know ahead of time, which most likely the answer is no, and how is she coping? I don't think that is their concern. They are more concerned about publishing these things and glamorizing his life and the beautiful life he had with his wife. Than to actually go into how she's feeling as a person. And that's an unfortunate situation with our society.
I know, and I just don't get it. It's like every time something happens, it just puts us in a deeper hole because people don't acknowledge our situation. And this is what I just don't get. I mean, it's not like it's something that's, you know, taboo anymore. It's not something that's isolated. Millions of women are having the same experience, and yet nobody acknowledges the pain that we go through with this, and I just don't get why they don't. Do you?
I don't. There are certain things that you just cannot explain. And what they say, common sense is not always common practice. Because to me, it makes sense. It's like, how do you not? But then you think back, and it's like, no, people don't think the same. And especially when we are so disempowered and we are living in a male society, women and women's thoughts, women's emotions, women's health, women's well-being is almost always an afterthought. So, no, I don't understand it. But I also understand it because of the society that we're living in.
Yeah, there's something that's wrong. You know, I just can't understand exactly why women do not get acknowledged. Men are hailed as heroes because they came out and they justified who they were after wasting a woman's life for 20, 30, 40 years. You know, then they come out and they meet somebody at 50 or 60 or 70. And now everybody's applauding them for being their authentic self when all the misery that the wife had to live through, and even with the actor Joel Grey, you know, because I used to like Joel Grey. And then when he came out at the age of 72 with his boyfriend, and he said, the best years of my life were spent with my wife. Well, I wonder if she really felt the same way. You know, they always talk about how those were great years, but I never hear the wife being interviewed. I never say, well, how do you feel about the whole thing, Mrs. Gray? Does it bother you that your husband was out having sex with men? You know, because I think that nobody wants to hear that side of it.
Well, you know, Bonnie, this is a great opportunity to challenge the media to do so. And I'm saying this and, you know, I'm making light of it, but we all know the truth of the matter is that's not going to happen. It's not important.
No, it's not. And it's so funny because a lot of times producers call me from television shows. And in my early days, you know, my first 20-some years with this, I would go on different shows, including I was on Oprah and Sally Jesse Raphael. You know, I was on a bunch of local shows, national shows, shows in Canada, shows in England. And then all of a sudden, the whole complexity of this kind of doing this kind of show, they stopped asking me to be on the show. They wanted me to see if I had any guests who would go on their show who were making these marriages work. They weren't going to tell the other side of the story. They just wanted to, you know, say, well, look, you know, some people are making it. Don't you have that contact with them? And I would tell them, no, I don't. That's not who I am. I'm not about that. I'm about people who don't want to stay in these marriages because that represents 95% of the cases. Do you find that to be true, too?
Well, you know, again, the statement is some people are making it. But just like with the articles or with these other people who come out, celebrities or whatever, the wives are not typically interviewed or asked about their opinion. When you say some people are making it, truly there are people who are continuing to live together. Are they making it or are they surviving? There's a major difference. Just because a couple stays together does not necessarily mean that they are making it. Because the couples I've met, and not to say that there is not harmony to some degree in the relationship, but the couples I've met are not making it as couples beyond that discovery period. They are living together more for the purpose of the children. Sometimes they are living separate lives where they are in agreement that you do you, I do me. But that's not making it. If you want to talk about making it, are you saying that? So the question is, to me, I would want to find out, what do you mean by making it? What does that statement mean to you? Because if you're talking about making it as husband and wife, typically that's not the case. If you're saying that they can continue to live together and make it work for the sake of the family, that has happened. But they're not making it as husband and wife. So I would need to clarify that.
I have met women who stay in their marriages for whatever the reason is, but I wouldn't say that any of them are really happy. I mean, you know, they're honest with me, and they have, you know, financial reasons, or they're older now, they've been married 40 years, they wouldn't even know where to start. You know, they get used to the abuse. You know, they've accepted the fact that their husbands are never going to love them like a woman. They might love them like a sister. But they've been living like that for so many years. But I don't find them happy. But then again, they wouldn't come to me if they were happy. If they were happy, they would go somewhere else. You know, I'm not for happy people. I'm for people who aren't unhappy, right?
That's exactly it. They're living together. That doesn't mean as husband and wife. So that's why when you say making it, you are giving a false idea that these people are continuing to live happily as husband and wife. In the way that husband and wife are living, like you're intimate, you're connected, you're one. But that's not typically the case. And there may be, you know, again, intimacy is not physical and sexual. And maybe you have some connection because you've known the person for so long. And this person becomes a companion, but not in the true sense of husband and wife. So I would challenge the making it. Like, what exactly do you mean by making it? Because if you mean that they're happy as husband and wife, I don't think so.
I guess, you know, people have lower expectations than I have. I just wouldn't want to live with somebody who I know was out there looking for men instead of for me. I mean, I don't think my ego could deal with that. I'm being honest with you. You know, I couldn't. My ego is not that strong, where I know other women, you know, I've met a few of them, and they're fine with it because they say, well, there's a lot of other stuff in the marriage besides just sex, and I have a boyfriend, and he has his boyfriend, and, you know, we're still a family unit. You know, people live alternative lives, but I never want to give people the impression that that's the majority of people, and I never wanted to give people the impression that they have to feel bad because they're not making their marriages work. And I think in my early years when I used to have support group meetings and it was like anything goes, whatever your situation, come on in, whether you're single, divorced, living with your husband who was living with his boyfriend in your house, I had every bizarre combination you could possibly imagine. And I kept quiet because I thought I'm supposed to just be accepting of people. But, you know, I was young then, and, you know, I just finished school and, you know, doing my master's program, and we were always being taught, well, you can't be judgmental. You know, that's not the role of a counselor. So I try to, you know, bite my lip or try to put in questions that wouldn't really hurt them, you know, like nicely phrased questions. Until after a while, then I said, no, this is crazy. This is really crazy. They get hurt anyway at the end. The husbands go off and do their thing. The wife has to worry about every time they're walking out the doors, it's going to be the last time they're coming back. They had all kinds of arrangements in the gay community. I don't know if you're familiar with a group like the Closed Loop group. Have you ever heard of them?
I have not, no.
Yes, look them up sometime. Yeah,
I will.
And Closed Loop is when a man is married to a woman, but he's able to have a boyfriend and just the three of them. You know, the woman can accept it because he's not all over the place. He's only with one person. And so that's the dynamics of that new relationship now, that she accepts him. Now, you know, and a lot of people joined that group back in the, you know, late 90s or so, whatever the case was. But that didn't work for them either because the guy thought it was just like an okay sign. I can go and have sex with somebody else. And it didn't end up being just that one person. Then they would start being really promiscuous with a lot of people. But there were women who I just never understood why they would go along with it. But I guess some women have their own issues. I do know that as a fact. There are women who have been sexually abused as they've been growing up, and they really didn't care whether a man had sex with them or not. They weren't looking for that. They were looking for someone who could love them just for them and without the sex. Have you encountered that in your experience?
Yes, definitely. And and again, that's not considered abnormal because whatever it is that you are going through, I don't ever really want to say it's abnormal. But you're absolutely correct in terms of somebody who already don't want to be seen, has just a sexual object, has had some trauma in their lives. This works for them because now they are not being harassed, or they don't have to, quote unquote, put out when they're not up to it. So it works for them. But Bonnie, that's an arrangement. That's not a marriage. In our modern world, that's an arrangement. So when you look at
you know
it
what, I had a
marriage,
couple like that in my support group. You know that you know she was a lesbian, he was a gay man. They got married, and
right.
I'm not sure they really knew each other were gay. You know when they got married, this is going back to the 1980s, late 80s, early
okay.
90s. But they married each other, and he liked the fact that she wasn't sexually aggressive, and she loved the fact that he wasn't sexually aggressive. So they
mm-hmm.
met not really knowing each other's backgrounds, but it just worked out okay. But in time, you know, even though they said it's perfect because, you know, we both have our own needs and feelings, in time it wasn't any good because of the fact that she loved him. She loved him so much.
Yeah.
And she was willing, if he needed to go out and do some kind of sexual stuff, and it wasn't like an emotional attachment, just going out and fulfilling whatever that need is. But what happened eventually after, you know, a few years they were together, and he would go do his thing, she would do her thing, but then he fell in love with someone. And he told her that, you know, he wants to be with this guy. And she was really heartbroken. And she said, well, we made a pledge to each other. Well, you know, you can't make those kind of pledges. They just don't work. I don't think, you know.
Well, I mean, again, eventually, in the end, if this other person is not in agreement with what you guys had already set aside for yourself, then yeah, it becomes a problem. And you're absolutely right. It may not always work because this was agreement between the two of you. Now, this third party may not want to be a part of that agreement. So someone is going to be left hurt. And, of course, in this situation, it's but that's why I keep repeating, when a person say these types of marriages work, you need to define what that means, work. Because, again, if we're talking about intimacy, loving relationship, I don't know how to say this. Well, I do know, but I keep repeating myself. I do know that there are exceptions to the rules. But on a regular basis, when society defines marriage between a man and a woman, the type that you're seeing between a gay man and a straight woman is not the same. So you cannot say they're making it. They have an arrangement that is working for them, but as far as an intimate male-female wife-husband relationship, personally, and I might be wrong, I don't believe that's making it work. That's agreeing to a term. That's my opinion.
I agree with you. I mean, I just don't see, you know, where it's happening. But, you know, once again, people have complex lives. They get into complex situations. And I just don't really see a lot of success in those relationships long term, maybe initially. But I looked up for you while we were on the phone about the closed loop relationships. And somebody wrote, okay, I wasn't sure where to post this since we're not a young couple, just starting out. So it suggested it might be more helpful to post them here for older asexual forum. Okay. Quick rundown. My husband and I are still working at finding a compromise in our marriage. He's gay. I'm asexual. We tried many things up till this point, but so far none have worked for us to be happy. So they're talking about closed-loop relationship, what it is. It says, a closed-loop relationship consists of two geographically proximate married men who don't cheat on their wives with other women and who don't fool around with other guys. It's an actual friendship between the guys, not just a sexual liaison. And the bond between the guys is separate from the married relationship they have with their wives. The goal is to provide marital stability and to bond with another guy. So she wrote, I'm wondering who's tried this and if it works. You know, so that was what a closed relationship, closed loop relationship is, but I haven't really seen them work. I just see them looking at, you know, well, this is another opportunity to cheat. You know, it sounds good in theory, but it's like communism. It might not sound bad in theory, but it never, ever works.
But what's lacking from that article?
Distort it.
Right. But it, I mean, Bonnie, based on what you just read, just that brief blur, what is lacking in this article? I don't hear anything about the woman. In terms of this closed loop relationship, again, that's giving this man an outlet to be able to be who he is and be with whomever he wants to be sexually. But what about her? This closed loop partnership and relationship is not actually inclusive of the wife having her own closed loop relationship and partnership with straight men. And as you were talking, I pulled up the article that you were reading. I don't see anything in there. So, again, this is another area where the woman's needs are overlooked. So she's to stay in this relationship. He fulfills his needs, but what about her needs?
Yeah, I think it's a justification for having sex outside your marriage and calling it something fancy, like closed loop. Because, once again, there was a time when this was so big, and I was reading all the postings on it. Like, I snuck into one of their chat rooms and stuff under, you know, fake identity. And it was, like, amazing to me, you know, all of the information I was getting from them. But most of them started out with a closed-loop relationship, but when that ended, they were seeing a lot of other loops on in the hole there, closing in on a lot of loops. I mean, there was loop after loop after loop. And, you know, it didn't matter. The wife wasn't even informed of any of these things going on. So they can call and they can justify it. Once again, as you said, is this really what you're looking for in a marriage? And I think that's the bottom line, really, what it really comes down to. And I know that Dr. Brian Hooper, you know, has been on our show many times. He always says to our women, is this what you signed up for? When you got married, was this what you signed up for? Because if it's not what you signed up for, you don't have to stay in it. You know, you signed up to have a husband who was a straight husband, whose focus was you, not you and some other guys, whether it be in a bar, on a Grindr app, on a, you know, wherever it is, that wasn't what you signed up for, and you don't have to stay with it or feel guilty about it.
Exactly.
Which reminds me, do you ever work with women who have... I was going to ask if you work for women that all have religious issues.
With which issues?
Religious issues.
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. And I think I have told you in previous shows I am one of those women.
Yeah,
I guess this is a marriage laughter because that always hit home for me. I'm definitely one of those women with the religious issues when it came to being married to a gay husband. And that is very, very difficult because you are, I don't want to say forced, but you are led to believe that it is your duty to remain married unless there are some biblical proof, and homosexuality was not one of them. And so for requesting a divorce. So religiously, you almost feel compelled to stay in a relationship, even when there is some level of awareness that your husband is gay, because the belief is that, yes, while he's married, has a good wife, he can't turn over a new leaf and give up the sin of homosexuality. So, yes.
And if he doesn't, then
and
it must be your fault, right?
One. I'm sorry?
And if he doesn't, then it must be your fault, the wife. You weren't a good enough wife to have him switch over all the way.
And, you know, I have to first let me proceed by saying there's some level of discomfort here because I was... like I said, just hit close to home. But one thing I recall being asked all the time, whenever we presented for couples counseling because we had what you call discipleship partners, the first question was always, sister, what did you do? Sister, how could you have done differently? Sister, what did you need to do differently? And that is very overwhelming because the blame is always on the woman that you didn't need what you didn't do what you needed to do in order for your husband to be the man he needed to be. That is a huge responsibility, Bonnie. And you know what? This is the first time in our entire time talking on podcast that I've actually been this descriptive about my own situation. Interesting.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's probably time for me to speak, obviously. But yes, you're absolutely right. When it comes to religious barriers and religious issues, yes, the blame is placed on the woman almost always immediately. Even when there was an awareness that the man was gay before he became part of a church or an organization.
I know. It seems like with a lot of religious organizations, let's start with the Catholic Church, and I am not Catholic, although my boyfriend is.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that I always say to him, why is it the Catholic Church, who I could have a lot of respect for, if they would have stood up and said the right thing when they had all these thousands of priests that are abusing children, if they would have stood up and said, guess what? You know, we follow Jesus, and Jesus loved children, and if he knew how you were destroying children's lives, he would banish you from the church, and we're doing it now. And we will prosecute you, and we will not spend millions of dollars getting lawyers for you. You are criminals. You're going to jail. That I would have had now respect for. When it comes to other religions, like the one you belong to, and many of our other women who belong to other religions, I feel the same way. Rather than put the blame on them, like you're not trying hard enough as a woman, you're not fulfilling your husband's needs enough, this is why he's thinking these thoughts. And I've heard this from hundreds of women over the years, that they were being blamed by their church for not realizing that God can change anybody's heart. God can change anybody's thinking. And if you were truly a good Christian, then you would be able to save your husband's way of thinking. And this hurts
right.
me so badly, because I think about how women get abused by religious leaders. I mean, this is a terrible form of abuse, wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. And I said absolutely is very basic. But I, you know, like you, and something I truly appreciate over you, I'm digressing a little bit, not over you, but about you, I'm a little confused right now, or disturbed, is that you are real, and you've always been very open. And I feel like tonight, for some reason, I've, like, opened up a little bit more than typically, and it opened up a floodgate for me. So there's some emotional things going on here, just to be authentic. So as you asked the question, the answer is yes, because I'm actually undergoing this right now as we speak, and I'm just being truthful, that as I think it through, the blame is always on you, the responsibility is on you, and the belief is that this man is trying his best and has agreed to change his ways. And if he's not changing after marrying you, that's because you didn't do what you needed to do. I
mm-hmm.
believe that's the question you asked me, yes?
And guess what, Maggie? That church
yeah.
that tells that to women, and there's a lot of them, whichever one it is, that's another toxic relationship in your life that you have to say goodbye to. There are lots
yes.
of nice churches around that don't feel that way. You know, so if it's a matter that you need to belong to a church, you need to belong to a church that understands you and validates you, not makes you feel guilty
yes.
for something you have no control over whatsoever. And once again, you become victimized all over again. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it is. But you don't realize that you're being victimized at that time because you're doing, quote unquote, the will of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably an entire show in and of itself. And the answer is yes. And you know what, Bonnie? The effects are, I don't want to say long-term, and I don't ever want to say lifelong, but I definitely want to say the effects are long. Yeah, well, they are long-term. And you have to be able to acknowledge that and work through it, because otherwise you will remain in that box where you actually believe all the things you've been told, and you will move from relationship to relationship where you carry the blame for everything that goes wrong in that relationship.
Exactly. And you keep getting victimized over and over again. And that's why I will tell everybody publicly and for the world to know that if I needed a therapist or I needed a counselor, I needed somebody to understand what I'm going through, you would be the counselor I go to. You understand this better than anybody, and you were very nice tonight to share this, that you yourself have lived through this. And so any of our listeners who listen in the upcoming days and weeks, you'll realize that Dr. Bonet totally understands where you're coming from because she's lived through this nightmare herself. She's not going to judge you and tell you, you know, you have any fault in this whatsoever. That's not who she is. She totally understands our situation. And even though she's in Georgia, you know, she can still work with people by phone, correct, Maggie?
Yes, I would. Yes.
You know, from wherever you are, you know, if you're suffering with this. And also, I hate to bring this up, but, you know, I have to be honest, like you said, there's a whole other aspect of being a minority woman and going through this. Because a lot of times, women who are minority women who go through this, it's a totally different dynamic. On top of all the pain and suffering, there's even more. Depending on, you know, like I say, where you're coming from, your background, your church, your cultural values, religious values. And that's why you're such a valuable asset to us. Because you understand when somebody might be from a different kind of community, from a different kind of culture, because you've experienced this yourself, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And can I leave you with a quote? Well, not quite leave you quite yet, but I'll let you guys know a quote that I was taught growing up. Well, not really growing up, once I got married. You do not air your dirty laundry. So, yes, I was part of a church who somewhat, well, no, let me be real, who stomped me and made me feel like I was responsible for the things that went wrong in my relationship, but I'm also part of a culture that you do not air your dirty laundry. So if you're having issues in the home, work it out. You don't go and tell everybody that what's going on in your house so that you're not judged or for whatever the reason, and therefore you never get the help that you actually need. So the struggle is even twice as hard, and it's not just because I'm Haitian. But also, I know that there's a lot of Black families that don't believe that you should go out outside of your community to air your dirty laundry. So it's a double whammy for us. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely. And on the page, if you're listening to this broadcast, you'll see Dr. Bonet's address. Also, she's always looking to start a support, you know, put you into a support group. You can reach her at Maggie Bonet at patriarchcounseling.com. It's on the web. It's on the broadcast here. Or if you need more information, you can write to me at bondk@aol.com. And Maggie, I'm so appreciative of you being part of this network and willingness to help women. You know, like I say, if I needed a therapist or a counselor, you'd be the first I'd be picking up the phone to call. And I really value your opinion that much and your compassion. I know the women that you've worked with in our group rave. They don't say you're wonderful. They rave about you and think you're just the best. So that's why I tell people listening to this broadcast, you don't have to worry about a therapist. You have the best one on the line here you can possibly get. And if you can't be in the Georgia area, Atlanta, Georgia area, you can certainly talk to Dr. Bonet by phone. Just write to her, send her an email, and she'll be happy to get back to you.
Absolutely.
So, Maggie,
and
with that in mind.
Yes. May I put a picture
go
there,
right ahead.
Honey? You are amazing. You are fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
You are an inspiration. With all that you have gone through, and you kept your head up high, and you stood your ground, you are, I just can't praise you enough. You are an inspiration to every single one of us, and I love you ever so dearly. Thank you for all.
Oh, I love you too, and I plan to have you back here in April before we wrap up. You'll be back. You'll be back before we finalize my show, right?
Thank you.
I'll be having you back. Me too, Maggie. All right, I love you, and to all our guests, hang in there. Have a good week, and there's help available anytime you need it. Good night to all of you, and good night, Maggie. I do love you.
Good night, Bonnie. Have a great one. Love you.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.